Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 10, verse number 36 for tonight. So I'm going to go right into the verse, and then we'll do the word by word. Namaha Parama Kalyana. Namaha Parama Mangala. Vasudevaya Shantaya. Yadunam Pataye Namaha. Namaha Parama Kalyana. Namaha Parama Mangala. Vasudevaya Shantaya. Yadunam Pataye Namaha. Namaha Parama Kalyana. Namaha Parama Mangala. Vasudevaya Shantaya. Yadunam Pataye Namaha. Please chant. Let's get here some more. Ladies, please. By word. Namaha. We therefore offer our respectful obeisances. Parama Kalyana, you are the supreme auspiciousness. Namaha, our respectful obeisances unto you. Parama Mangala, sorry. Whatever you do is good. Vasudevaya, unto the original personality of Godhead. Vasudeva, Kshantaya, unto the most peaceful, Yadunam, of the Yadu dynasty. Pataye, unto the controller. Namaha, our respectful obeisances unto you. So we all know who are uttering these prayers. These are the two sons of Kuvera, Nalakuvara and Manigriva. And as we have seen so many times in advertisements, before and after, this is the after. Before, they were just drunken, carousing, shouting, boisterous, impertinent, and whatever else you want to tack onto that. Now, respectful, venerational, adorational, full of obeisances, full of affection, look at the difference between what they were and what they are. So I'm going to talk a little about this morning, about the value of penance, because quite often when penance comes up, we have to fast for half a day, or we have to fast for a full day as it is coming up. Oh, wow, it's only water, you know. So, however, the only reason we would think like that is because we're not fully grasping or perusing or absorbing ourselves in this pastime, which shows the value of penance and how it changes one, how it benefits one, how it exalts one. And while one may feel some pain, a little bit of suffering, a little distress, difficulty, we should think of that in terms of what it will translate into in the future. And that's why Srila Prabhupada did put a big emphasis on, especially in the younger persons, so many devotees were in their 20s when they came. And Prabhupada would just get on. Come on, you get up at 3 o'clock and get down here. Mangalarti, get your rounds done. Get out there and work like... It was amazing. So inspiring, so enthusing, so bubbling over. And devotees were just in the Mangalarti. You see, they would be jumping and screaming and yelling. They weren't doing the circles. Everything was like up and down and plenty of clapping. And ladies were generally upstairs, and you're always wondering whether the ceiling was going to fall down on you because everyone was really jumping up, jumping down heavily. So, translation. O supremely auspicious, we offer our respectful obeisances unto you, who are the supreme good, O most famous descendant and controller of the Yadu dynasty, O son of Vasudeva, O most peaceful, let us offer our respectful our obeisances unto your lotus feet. So why don't we all do that together? O supremely auspicious, we offer our respectful obeisances unto you, who are the supreme good, O most famous descendant and controller of the Yadu dynasty, O son of Vasudev, O most peaceful, let us offer our obeisances unto your lotus feet. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki. The word Parama Kalyana is significant because Krishna, in any of His incarnations, appears in order to protect the sadhus, paritranaya sadhanam. The sadhus, saintly persons or devotees, are always harassed by non-devotees, and Krishna appears in his incarnations to give them relief. This is his first concern. If we study the history of Krishna's life, we shall find that for most of his life, he predominantly engaged in killing demons one after another. So Krishna may be rightly termed the original killing machine. And killing in the cause of righteousness, especially for the purpose of protecting Brahminical culture, is considered something beneficial and helpful. And so many people, what they called, used to call, I don't know if they still do, the peaceniks, they figured that no, everybody should just be peaceful. Well, yes, everybody should be peaceful, but sometimes we have to protect that condition that allows for peacefulness, and it may involve violence. Second of all, these people do not understand that people are of four different natures. You know, we have the three modes and how they interact or interplay on those and manifest in character. We have brahminical, educational, and religious. And we have the kshatriyas, who are warriors and administrators. We have vaishyas, who are farmers and bankers and merchants. Then we have kshudras, who serve the other three castes in various numerous types of activities which go on, generally handiwork of some sort or another. So everyone plays his part. So generally this peacenik mentality is, no, all the kshatriyas, no more kshatriyas. Just sit down and let the foreign nations come in and just shoot us up, string us up, and let them rule. No, that's not it. And Srila Prabhupada makes this unmistakably clear, that fighting is necessary sometimes. But there are persons who are designated for that, and those persons who have that tendency can utilize it in the loving service of Krishna. So, let me move ahead. This. Omagyana timirandasya gananjana shalakaya Chakshul Unmaritam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. Just repeating the translation. O supremely auspicious, we offer our respectful obeisances unto you, who are the supreme good. O most famous descendant and controller of the Yadu dynasty, O son of Vasudeva, O most peaceful, let us offer our obeisances unto your lotus feet. So that was one point I wanted to make, is that fighting can be used, and fighting is in the can be in the best interest of safeguarding Brahminical and Vedic culture. And that's the way it was supposed to be used. Of course, fighting for the sake of fighting is not only useless and worthless, but sinful. So, therefore, it can be put to a useful test, and persons who are fighting for the cause of righteousness, but beyond just righteousness, Srila Prabhupada emphasizes just having a righteous country, a noble country, a virtuous country, that is good, but it is certainly not good enough. He wanted everyone to become God-realized and self-realized, because without self-realization, without God-realization, the most we can come up to, which is good, the mode of goodness, very good, because you can't get to pure goodness, shuddha-sattva, until you reach goodness. But throughout the world, they stop at just goodness. And what often happens is that when people become good, because everyone wants to be a lord of some sort or another, they feel that Yes, I'm a good person. I'm an admirable person. I'm a lovable person. I'm a charming person. Like that. And what happens is this develops into a kind of pride. It's called false pride. So when we begin to think highly of ourselves in that way, I'm good, I'm great, I'm wonderful, I'm this, I'm that, that's the same old thing, being attached to the material body, the extensions of it in the form of our qualities. I have so many good qualities, I have so many nice things to say, I have said, done so many wonderful things. So the result of that is that we begin to think that we're superior to others who do not have that those qualities. Consequently, when pride comes, it can create a lot of damage and difficulties in relations, personal relations, in family relations, business relations, all kinds of relations, because one thinks he's superior to another, and if somehow or other the other person calls him down or puts him down or her down or says something which might not be most flattering, person gets upset, person gets disturbed, person gets shaken up. Who are you calling up? Who do you think you are? You know, that kind of a thing. These happen every weekend at the bars. They have two men talking about the baseball averages of their favorite baseball player. So one says, no, he's batting 355. They say, no, 358. No, 355. No, I saw it in the... And before you know it, they're into a fight. And one guy gets shoved, the other one goes outside, goes to his car, picks up his Magnum 55, comes in, 355. That's it. And he spends 55 years in jail just for shooting somebody over a stupid, silly, superficial thing like that. So it happens as a result of pride. We explode when our little sense of self-esteem, our sense of self-importance, our sense of self-love is in any way throttled, shaken, upset, disturbed. Nice little story that I was just reading last night in the Krishna book. The story of Vidyadhara. Fascinating. The story begins with Krishna and Vasudeva and all the cowherd men. They're all going to Ambikavana to worship Lord Shiva and Ambika because they are great loving servants of Krishna. So what happens is that they made a fire at night and they sit down. They went and they were went to sleep, and and some big reptile, big serpent, came and began swallowing Nanda Maharaj up. So Nanda Maharaj cried, "Help! Help! Help!" And all the other cowherd men woke up and they saw that Nanda's being eaten by a snake. So they grabbed some of the burning logs and they start banging, smashing the snake, but it wouldn't hurt the snake. So Nanda was crying, "Krishna, Krishna," because Krishna he resolves all problems.
Sorry about that.
So Krishna gives a swift kick to this serpent, and as he does, what happens? What happens? The snake is transformed into the most beautiful, the most handsome, the most compelling looking demigod. I mean, he's shining, glittering, beautiful clothes. So Krishna looked at him and he said, "You know, you look like you're to be a nice demigod. How did you get into this reptilian form?" So he says, "Well, it's a horrible story." He says, "Come on, let's hear it." He says, "Well, before I was reincarnated into a snake, I was my name was Vidyadhara, and I was a demigod, and I was considered among the most handsome of men. And I used to drive around in my airplane, you know, driving here and there, and I loved the praises and the adorations and glorifications of the ladies. You know, I would drive past them, and they'd go, 'Oh, look, you know, like that. So he was very much enamored of this. He very puffed up, very proud, thinking he's the most beautiful of men. Of course, even if you are very beautiful, when you start to think of Krishna, you think you're just a minuscule, tiny, insignificant, ugly wretch. This is how we develop humility. We see Krishna's beauty. We exalt it, we glorify it, we honor it, and whatever beauty we have, we realize it comes from Him because He is the source of all beauty. And sometimes a person says, well, I'm not born very beautiful. Be thankful, because you have to deal with all this pride. So, anyway, he saw the sage Angira as he was driving. And Angira was not very attractive. He was very unsightly. And so when he looked at him, because he was so beautiful, so handsome, and Angira was so ugly and unsightly, the first thing he did was, ha, 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 like that. He was laughing. So Angira looked at him. He could read right into his mind. He could see his thoughts, know his thoughts. So he said, for this pride, I will teach you a lesson, just as Narada Muni has taught Madhigriva and Nala Kuvera a lesson. Similar. Sorry again. So he said, I curse you to become a snake. And so he turned him into this big, gigantic snake. And that's the way he lived for a long time until Krishna kicked him. And when Krishna kicked him, he did more than kick him and turn him back into a demigod, but he gave him great, high, advanced spiritual feelings. When you get kicked by Krishna, it's not an ordinary kick. Everyone should be praying and crying out to be kicked by Krishna. There was in the scriptures, I remember, Sivananda Sen, he got kicked by Nityananda. And he was so happy. He was dancing and jumping and clapping. Wow, I got kicked by Nityananda. He felt the transformation taking place within himself. So anyway, he said that's what happened. So this curse of the sage Angira has turned out to be the greatest of blessings. Because I feel so different now. You've kicked me. And the wonderful qualities that you have, which I ignored because I was always thinking of myself, now have manifest. I see how great you are, how wonderful, how glorious, how how powerful you are, how beautiful you are. What is my beauty next to yours? He humbled out. He became modest. He became retiring, so to speak. So when difficulties or troubles or problems, which might be painful, beset us, it is not a time for sorrowing. It is a time in certain, if we can see the depth of it and not just the surface of it, it is a time for great rejoicing. Because we become to see ourselves and we come to see the world as it is, as opposed to how we like to think it is due to our impurities, due to this self-love, due to this pride that we develop. So that was very wonderful. So he uttered some very beautiful prayers, and Krishna blessed him, and he went back to the heavenly planet. Prabhupada makes a very nice point there, though. He said it is unfortunate that he just wanted to go back again to the heavenly planet, because it means there was some attachment there. He hadn't become like a pure devotee, because he was attached, you know, to the beauty, attached to all the beautiful people. Yadavas, they're a particular, like a race of people. So he wanted to go there where the pleasure is so intense, so supreme. But a devotee does not desire that. A devotee has only one thought. My dear Lord, please transfer me to a place where you are and I can serve you continuously. Never stop serving you. Never stop thinking of you. Never stop glorifying you. Never stop honoring you. Never stop bowing down to you. Never stop lauding you and praising you. let my entire life be one completely consecrated to, succumb to, surrender to you, you, and only you. This is devotee. He's not concerned about how much pleasure or whether the halava is going to be really good this morning. Not concerned about that. If it's good and it's tasty, he enjoys it. But it's not an aspiration. The aspiration is to always be thinking of Krishna. Always be glorifying Krishna. Always be thanking Krishna. Krishna is so, he's so grateful when his devotees, they thank him. Not just, oh, thanks, Krishna. Thanks. But with some feeling, with some heart, with some devotion. We can even live our life on a superficial platform and just say, well, thanks. Hey, thanks. But you don't want, there's no meaning behind it, no feeling behind it, no thought behind it. Because when we receive something which didn't have to be given, and it's a grace or it's a gift or it's an honor, it should not be taken for granted. If we do, it means we're very proud. We think we're great. We think we deserve it. We think we should have it. And that's unfortunate, because that is the pride that Nalakuvara and Manigriva were suffering from. And as a result, they felt they could live a very casual, easygoing life. Just take your clothes off, enjoy, you know, associate with ladies, get drunk, carouse. This is what they thought. These were the sons of, you know, a very esteemed demigod, Kuvera. He was head of the treasury of the heavenly planets. So, therefore, Nalakuvara and Manigriva were stuck in this. They were cursed by Narada Muni because, as we know, we've been hearing, but it doesn't hurt repeating it, that they were carousing with some beautiful girls in the Lord Shiva's lake, having fun, drunk, whooping it up. I mean, you can just imagine. If I have to give you a little reminder, just think of when we were all karmis, and think of New Year's Eve night. New Year's Eve, you know, that was the big night. Everybody got drunk. And if you've ever been to Times Square or any of these, people are shouting and screaming. You know, like the central nervous system is completely crashed. And all they're doing is just shouting things that they would never say. Women are talking like they would never. Men are talking even more like beasts than ever before. So that's what Nalakuvara and Manigriva were. So when Narada Muni appeared there, the ladies who had some modesty, they came out of the water, they covered themselves up, you see, because that women have a natural modesty, even though it can be knocked out by the women's liberation. It's actually women's enslavement. It's not women's liberation. So what happened was that they covered themselves up, but Nalakuvara and Manigriva, hey, how's it going, guys? Hey, you look great. This is not the way you present yourself to a great sage. A great sage must be honored. We have throw ourselves at the ground, beg for his mercy, apologize for even looking the way we do. So they didn't. And when Narada Muni saw this, his only feeling was one of sympathy. It was one of even empathy. He could feel what was they were experiencing, the misery of their putrid, horrible life. And he felt, I have to do something for these people. They're incorrigible at this point. If I were to tell them, do this, don't do this, don't do this, they'd just throw sand in my face. So he decided that he would help them. And he would cause them to be born as twin Arjuna trees in the courtyard or in the backyard of Nanda Maharaj, where Krishna would grow up. And they would get the association of Krishna, you know, romping around, playing around, leaning against the trees. All that was beneficial to them. So finally, when, as we know, Krishna was tied up by Mother Yashoda to a wooden spice mortar, And Krishna decided to be a little more naughty. But he was more than naughty. He was actually being very benedictive. So he dragged the mortar, because it was tied onto his waist, and he dragged it out to the twin Arjun trees, which were just separated, and he dragged the mortar right up against the tree. But he went between the tree, and as he kept pulling and pulling, little, like 3 years old, the whole tree comes down with a crashing sound. So, and out comes these two blazing, illuminating demigods. And all they can do is thank Krishna. All they can do is be respectful to Krishna. All they can do is feel gratitude to Krishna. And all they can do is glorify him. You are the highest. You are the greatest. There is nobody better, nobody more wonderful than you. Now it was a complete change, complete contrast. 1,000 years ago, it was, hey, how's it going? Now, palms together, head bowed, obeisances. That's what austerity does for us. It transforms us. It makes us, ennobles us, exalts us. So sometimes people will wonder, how does that happen? Well, if we've been used to enjoying and enjoying and enjoying, and now suddenly we have to suffer and then suffer and suffer, we begin to taste the pinch or the puncture of pain. And when we get to feel pain and more pain and more pain, we can then begin to realize, we begin to reflect, because Nalakuvara and Manigriva, they remembered their past sin. We begin to remember, this is what I'm being punished for. And there they were, fully conscious, in the trunks of trees, or in the trees, and they were experiencing all this confinement. I mean, we just think about it. Suppose one of our brother or our mother, father, or somebody takes you and throws you into a closet. He throws you into a closet tonight at 5 o'clock. Locks it. And you say, okay, the game is up. I'd like to come out. Hello? No answer. Hello? And you're just there. And one day passes. And another day passes. And we're just locked in that closet. Think about it. I mean, it's devastating, just the thought. So they were locked in there for 1,000 years. And it had a purifying effect upon them. They realized what they had done. They realized the wrong of it all. They realized how disrespectful they were. They realized what they must now do, how they have to make it right. And when they came out of the trees, they were making it right. They were saying the kind of words that they should have said when they first saw Narada Muni when they came out of the water. Oh, my Lord, down on the ground, dandavat. Now they were saying, oh, you, as the verse says, now you are so glorious. You are so glorious. You are responsible for the... Sorry. You are responsible for this creation of this world. You are the source of all beauty, the source of all love, the source of all kindness, the source of all strength, the source of all wealth. Sorry about that. The source of all wealth, the source of all strength. What are we next to you? Insignificant, worthless, inconsiderable, lowly, good for nothing. And we were thinking we're important, we're great, we're glorious, we're wonderful, look at me, look at me. So now they were in their proper position, the position in which they could continue to make advancement. And Krishna guaranteed them, seeing what they had gone through, seeing what they now were, that they would go back home, back to Godhead. This was their last birth. So it wasn't such a bad deal after all. A little painful, yes. A little, constricting, yes. But in the ultimate, the final analysis, they would go back home, back to Godhead. So they went back, of course, first to their father, stayed there for a little while, and then back home, back to Godhead. So it purifies. The purification comes in the realization that we are vulnerable, we're destructible, we're horrible at times. When we come to realize all this, instead of thinking we're so great, so grand, so mighty, so wonderful, who we really are next to Krishna, doesn't mean we should measure ourselves against each other. That's foolish. One person is beautiful, another is ugly. Why does it say, I'm beautiful, she's ugly, I'm handsome, he's... Why should... That's meaningless. How handsome you are, it'll all be gone. How beautiful you are, it'll all be gone. Today you're 25, 30, then you'll be 60, and nobody will even want to turn their head towards you. No more passing the store windows and looking, primping the hair, and like this, you know. All this kind of thing, to be sure that you're looking just at your... Doesn't matter what you look like then. As they say, you're over the hill. No, maybe over three hills. So, therefore, being beautiful, beauty is really in the heart. Beauty is in the soul. Beauty is in the love that we manifest. Beauty is in the love that we manifest to the spiritual master. Beauty is in the love that we manifest to Radha and Krishna. Beauty is in the love that we manifest to the different devotees of Radha and Krishna. And it's so nice. I remember the old days, you'd be walking along the street here. And there'd be, without expectation, somebody comes in and they got a little pot of Maha Prasadam. Here, this is for you. Or here, this is for you. And for me? What did I do? I just made offenses. I didn't even come to Mangal Arti this morning. But Krishna still loves me, notwithstanding. He's still giving me himself in the form of this Maha Prasadam. So, what does it do to us? It makes you feel so good inside. That Krishna cares for me. Krishna really loves me. Who's giving this to me? The devotee, but the devotee is being spurred on. He's being urged. He's being inspired by Krishna to give it to a devotee. So when we receive these things, we should immediately have to think, Krishna is, in spite of my faults, in spite of my all of my bad qualities, still Krishna is helping me. Still Krishna is thinking of me. Still Krishna is taking care of me. Still Krishna is letting me know in one way or another that he loves me. Where can you find such a person? We can't, and therefore it is so wonderful that we see in the form of Srila Prabhupada so much manifestation of Krishna. People would give Prabhupada gifts. They give him a ring. He already had four rings on his finger. So another ring comes. What would he do with it? He gives it away. Gives it away. Gives it. Garlands. I remember we met him at the airport on June 6th. June 6th, 1976, and we were going on the conveyor belt. One garland after another was being put over Prabhupada's neck. You couldn't see his face. All you could see is a little nose sticking out. All the garlands were piled up. So as they were coming on, he couldn't get them off fast enough and give them to the devotees. This is Prabhupada. This is transcendental love. This is the feeling of spiritual affection. It means love not just for myself, but mainly love given to Krishna in every being, every person, everywhere. That is our only business, and that is what will create not only transformations in us, but it will transform the entire world. Love is the true transformer. But we should understand that love must be complemented with strength and not just childish sentimentality. Strength meaning that it comes from Krishna and goes out, and people feel the sincerity, the purity, the intensity of it. And when people feel that, they want to do it. They want to engage in devotional service, and they want to become pure, and they want to share in that great dynasty of love. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or any challenges or... No challenges, no. You sure? I'll give you 3 seconds more. One, two, three. Prasadam! Go for it.